Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
Looked out of sorts to start this season. It's got to come around at some point. The 1-2. Half swing as Pilar goes. Strike three. Blazer says Bautista went around. And Jose strikes out for the fourth time today.
I mean, anytime that you're accustomed to being a contributor and you're not, you know, it kind of weighs on you a little bit. But I got to get past that and just figure out a way to get back on track and start doing more at the plate and putting us in better situations to win the games.
It's At the Letters for Thursday, April 20th on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. My name is Arden Zwelling. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, how did you enjoy school day this afternoon?
It was loud. I actually saw something I don't think I'd seen before, which was a lot of the students holding up their phones. So it was almost like a concert where you have those lights all around the stadium.
Oh?
But they were promptly told to turn them off.
You're distracting the players.
Yeah.
With your phones. With your dang technology. That's cool. Loud in the ballpark. A lot of screaming.
Yeah.
A lot of chanting. Was it pretty full? I wasn't
yeah.
there.
It was 40,000 plus. I forget the exact number. It was a lot of people. A lot of school kids, and they were ultimately disappointed by the result, as is the pattern with the Toronto Blue Jays.
They might have been happy just not to be in class.
That's true.
Right?
Keep it in perspective.
That's part of it. But no, yeah, no shortage of disappointment if you're a Toronto Blue Jays fan. Plenty of disappointment to go around. Saw your gamer pop into my inbox. It had the word demoralizing in the title. Believe I've thrown that word around in a couple of gamers recently. I'm pretty sure Shy has as well. There's only so many synonyms for demoralizing. That's really what a lot of these Blue Jays losses have been. It's not like they're getting crushed every night. It's not like they're getting beat out of the ballpark. They're just losing in really, really demoralizing fashion. Whether it's, you know, they can't buy a hit, or a bullpen arm gives it up, or, you know, it's just wild.
Yeah, it's really exceeded anyone's expectations for how bad a team could be, how bad this team could be in particular. But you look around baseball, no one else is playing this badly. I mean, other teams, the Cardinals are struggling. A lot of teams are performing below expectations, but no one else is 3-12. That is next level.
The Toronto Blue Jays are the worst team in baseball.
Yeah.
Like, just factually, the worst team in baseball. And that's not good if you're a Toronto Blue Jays fan. The primary reason I would say that is happening is the offense. I don't think the Blue Jays have pitched that poorly. I do think that they have scored the second least runs in baseball to the Kansas City Royals, who have scored less runs than the Blue Jays and yet have won 7 games.
Right.
If the Blue Jays get, and it's not even that much, like a 2-run homer here, 2-run double there, you know, string together a couple hits. I mean, some of these losses turn into wins, but they haven't had that because this offense has been failing on all cylinders.
Yeah, it definitely, that's a good way to put it, because you look around up and down the lineup, there just aren't a lot of guys who are playing up to their previous standards, let alone having the kind of career breakout year that you see with whoever it is, and Eric Thames, and Nomar Mazara. Guys have breakouts. Sometimes you get that on a team, and you know, we'll talk about Kevin Pillar a bit later. He's certainly doing well, but you look up and down this lineup, there's just so many disappointments offensively.
Yes. Lots of guys in deep, deep funk. Steve Pierce, very deep funk. Devin Travis, Russell Martin, Jose Bautista. We can kind of quickly touch on each. You know, like Steve Pierce is a guy that I think everybody expected to hit a lot better than he has to this point. Hasn't really, you know, kind of has a reputation as a guy who hits pretty well against lefties. Hasn't hit anybody pretty well to this point. He was a really key piece of this offseason for the Blue Jays. When you look at him and Kendrys Morales as kind of the two guys they brought in to be offensive contributors, I'd say Morales has done what you'd expect him to do. I think he can still be better than he's been, but he's had some really, for lack of a better word, clutch swings. Steve Pierce, not so much.
No. Yeah. I don't know exactly what to make of it. Have you seen anything with him, his approach, his swing, that gives you any kind of sense of why this is happening?
No, I know Shai Davidi talked to him the other day, and I read that, and I encourage everybody to read it at sportsnet.ca. He kind of talked about trying a bit too hard, and I think you'll probably hear a lot of that from Blue Jays hitters right now, where they're just the deeper you get into a slump or into a funk, you know, the more you want to break out of it. You know, these hitters that are, you know, putting up offers every night and striking out a lot and, you know, have one hit in their last 30 plate appearances or something like that, they got to think about that all day long. That weighs on them all day. And when they go to sleep, when they would get up in the morning, when they go get groceries, all that stuff, like, it's on their mind. So when you are dealing with something like that, yeah, you can get a bit domed, as they would say, and start thinking a bit too much. And maybe you do something with your approach that you don't normally. And maybe you just try different things that you haven't done before in your career. You know, it's baseball. It's that kind of sport where sometimes, Gibby was talking about this the other day, sometimes the harder you try, the harder you make things on yourself.
Yeah, it's not as though you're a football player and you can try harder and push your way through, you know, to the quarterback and tackle him or something. This is just, you know, there's so many fine elements to a swing or to an offensive approach. I don't know. When it comes to Pierce, it's so hard to put your finger on. I mean, he's faced a bunch of lefties. He's struggled. He just hasn't hit for the same kind of power. And since opening day, which was really good, he had three hits.
Yeah.
I think he's got three hits since then.
Less. He's got two hits. Or what is he? No, yeah, you're right. He's got three hits since then.
So that's a rough, that's a big drop off.
I'll say. Yeah. Yeah, no. And he's not walking either, which isn't great. You know, you would like to at least, when a guy isn't, you know, quite swinging it the way that, you know, he wants to, you'd like him to at least be finding other ways to get on base. And we're not seeing that from Steve Pierce. We're not seeing that too much from Devin Travis either. Not a whole lot of walks from him, not a whole lot of hits. You know, I have noticed with Devin that he has at least lately been making his outs the other way, which is, look, when Devin's starting to kind of get his swing where he needs it to be, he starts going the other way and he's shooting balls to right field. So that, you know, that's good, but he's still making outs.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's not striking out a ton, which is nice. Still making outs. What are you seeing from Devin Travis?
Yeah, I think the Jays wanted him to be more aggressive. I mean, you wrote about that and his whole, I mean, it's funny, that piece was a week ago. And he's still in the same offensive funk. But yeah, they wanted him to be a little bit more aggressive up there and to try to go up there with a swing first mentality. And I've seen them try a couple hit and runs with Devin Travis up there just to get the bat back going. And you've seen a few signs. He's hit a couple balls hard, but that's the baseline. I mean, you've got to hit balls hard. Sometimes you hit a ball hard and it turns into an out. So I think that for whatever reason, it hasn't added up. And for all of the concern around Devin Travis this spring, not a lot of it had to do with his ability as a hitter. For the most part, we were wondering whether he'd be healthy enough. And he's been able to take the field. His defense actually looked really good at times, and yet the offense hasn't been there.
No, it is not. Another guy who the offense has not been there for is Russell Martin. He also fits into that category. Good defender. Offense hasn't been there. You know, I know how hard Russell Martin's been working at trying to get out of this thing. I mean, he was at Rogers Center till 2 a.m. recently, just taking swings with Troy Tulowitzki, with Darwin Barney in the batting cages, trying to figure it out. He's made some little adjustments to his approach. Said he was getting kind of jumpy at the plate, and he's trying to just kind of stay a bit more within himself, let the ball travel, trust his swing. You know, we haven't seen it yet. We've seen some balls hit rather far. You know, he had a single off the top of the wall the other day. He had a very long home run. He's made some very long outs to the warning track. You know, those are good signs, and it seems like it's going to come around. But, you know, when you talk about Russell Martin right now, you're talking about a guy who is 4 for 39 on the season.
Yeah, and this is a little bit reminiscent of last year when he got off to that slow start.
Right.
I'm not to the point where I'm going to change my view of Russell Martin as a hitter just because we have such a long track record for him. And, you know, even though he is over 30 years old, it's not like he's approaching 40 or anything like that. So I think that this is honestly just a slow start for him. And I would say that, you know, I think that for the Toronto Blue Jays as a whole, for their offense as a whole, I think for the most part, this has been a slow start. I don't fundamentally think that this group is incapable of scoring runs. Obviously, what's happened has happened. They're 3-12. That really impacts their season, their chances. But Russell Martin, a guy I think that will go on to have a good, solid offensive year.
Would you say that about Jose Bautista, who is the guy that a lot of people are looking at, who you know, as somebody whose struggles right now are just baffling?
They are, and
it's, we're seeing a different Jose Bautista at the plate right now. We're seeing a guy with a weird approach. We're seeing a guy who's chasing. We're seeing a guy who's not, get when he gets his fastball, isn't able to make contact with it. These are things that, you know, Jose Bautista has made his career on, not expanding the zone and on when he gets his pitch, smoking it. And we haven't seen that to this point.
Yeah, it is very puzzling to see from Bautista. And when you look at his plate approach, as you mentioned, it really hasn't been there. And he's been chasing more often. You look at some of the numbers on FanGraphs for his approach within the zone, he's chasing or swinging through pitches now 11% of the time. Last year it was 7%. So that's a pretty substantial increase. 11% would be the highest it's been since his rookie season in 2004. Early, of course. I mean, this could change. This could change quickly. But that's a lot of swing and miss for Bautista, a player who doesn't usually strike out all that much. His contact rate is down. So it's been a different look for Bautista. Now, he's done this before. In 2015, he struck out a lot early on. That year, he hit 40 home runs. He hit the bat flip. He had a great year, just a tremendous offensive season. So you don't want to read too much into it, but this is different. His strikeout rate is higher right now than it was then. He struck out 4 times, a career high, against Chris Sale in the finale against Boston. Struck out 21 times in 54 at-bats. That is a ton of strikeouts. And I don't know what to make of it, but it's not good.
He spoke after the game today. Was that... How did that... Tell me the genesis of that happening.
Well, you know, after a game like that, there's no obviously offensive star. They scored one run. So, yeah, he's standing up there in front of us and...
Like, did you guys ask for him or did he walk into it?
Yeah. No,
you guys asked.
The request came.
The request came.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
So the request was made and then he comes in and starts addressing his hitting. He was very matter of fact about it. He said, hey, I'm not swinging the way I want to. I'm disappointed with the way I'm swinging. You know, just to take partial quotes here, his approach hasn't been consistent. It weighs on you a little bit to be struggling the way that he is right now. So he knows it's not good. He knows he's expanding his strike zone and he looks off balance at times, which I'm just not used to seeing from Bautista.
Yeah, he looks different at the plate. Like, he just doesn't look like himself. And, you know, I'd love to, you know, if you would, like, talk to him about what he's been doing with his approach, if he's made any adjustments, because he just looks a bit, off balance is a good word for it. You know, he doesn't have that balance to his swing. It looks like maybe his hands are a bit lower in his swing. He's just kind of it looks like he's going through some stuff.
Yeah,
and you know, the question is, when does, because look, it's 15 games. Like, the players will go through 2 week slumps during a season. Like, that happens. So to slump for 15 games, that's not out of the ordinary. And maybe it's just a slump that is happening now at the beginning of the season. Maybe his next 15 will be more like what we have come to expect from Jose Bautista. You know, over the last 6, 7, 8 years of his career. But at what point does it become, well, you're just a diminished hitter now? Yeah. You know, how many at-bats, how many plate appearances? You know, like I think a lot of managers will tell you, well, you like to let a guy get 100 at-bats and then you kind of figure out where he's at. Well, you know, that's just kind of a randomly chosen arbitrary number. But, you know, Jose Bautista is at 55 right now. So, you know, I don't know if, I'm certainly not ready to write him off, but it would be... I'd be a lot more optimistic if he was making solid contact and, you know, just lining out or, you know, hard grounders or, you know, flyouts to the warning track or something. If he wasn't swinging and missing as much as he is, and if his approach didn't seem to be, frankly, as much of a mess as it seems to be right now.
Which is just weird from him. We're not used to that.
So strange.
Yeah. I mean, with guys like Bautista, Donaldson, Encarnacion, the trademark of that Blue Jays offense in 15 and 16. Was the fact that these guys knew the strike zone. They weren't going to expand. They weren't going to look off balance. And by his own admission, this is what is happening right now to Jose Bautista. So I would agree with you. I think around 100 plate appearances, that's when you really start to read into this a bit more. At this point, it's a really bad 15 games. If it becomes a really bad 25 or really bad 30 games, then maybe they have a bigger picture question on their hands about him. Now, the big picture questions are more about this offense in general, about this team in general, where they go. But as an individual, it certainly hasn't been a promising start.
4 more strikeouts for Jose Bautista today, which puts him near the top in the major leagues, vaults him above old friend Edwin Encarnacion, who has struck out 21 times
wow.
this year. Going into today's action, and Edwin Encarnacion had 21 and Jose Bautista had 18. Bautista really making a charge in that race. You know, some discussion about whether Bautista should be dropped in the batting order. That's a hella delicate thing to try to manage for John Gibbons. Because look, how long can you have your, whether he's hitting second, third, wherever, how long can you have somebody that high in your batting order just pretty much being an offensive zero? How long can you do that? But then how do you factor in, well, what Jose Bautista has done for this franchise in his career, his track record as a hitter, you know, just his status as one of the highest paid players on this team and somebody who's, you know, expected to be one of your primary offensive contributors. That's an embarrassing thing to drop that guy to 7 or 8, you know, or even to 6. How do you approach that if you're John Gibbons? I don't know.
Well, I think it would be an easier situation for the Blue Jays if they had Steve Pearce and Devin Travis and Russell Martin all hitting, and then, hey, we got to get these guys more at bats. You know, we got to mix them in. At this point, you're trying to bury everyone in the order. You're trying to bump everyone down. I mean, so at this point, you don't really have an obvious replacement. I think they ride it out with him, just see what they can get, because it's not as though he's surrounded by a lot of productive hitters right now.
They've already pushed Kevin Pillar and his 361 OBP up to the top.
As high as he can go. Justin Smoke, the cleanup hitter. I mean, they're making adjustments. They only have so many hitters who are actually hitting.
We're seeing Darwin Barney play a lot right now. And I asked Gibby about it the other day. I was like, you know, Barney in there, interesting. And he's like, hey, he's a 400 hitter right now. We don't have a lot of those.
Nope, they do not.
So, you know, it's your hands are kind of tied as John Gibbons. I don't know how you know, we see a different lineup every day. And I think that we should, you know, it's also worth pointing out that the bottom third of this batting order is so unideal right now with Josh Donaldson on the disabled list, with so many guys struggling. Your bottom third, I mean, you know, you're looking at a combination of Darwin Barney, Ryan Goins, Chris Coughlin, Justin Smoke. You know, it's not ideal, your bottom third. So it can't be easy for John Gibbons to have to try to fill out this batting order every day and try to find some combination and some sequence that's going to work.
Yeah, no, exactly. And you look even at bench players that we thought would be offensive contributors, guys like Jared Saltalamacchia, 14 at-bats this year.
How many Ks? Like 10?
You got
what
it.
Right
there.
It's a lot. I've only seen him strike out. It's
57% strikeout rate. That's too much. So, I mean,
that is too much.
That's just, you know, and of course, it's tough when you're playing. You know, I asked Gibby about this after the game today. Yeah. What are you seeing from Saltalamacchia? I mean, he's started, what, 2-3 games? Yeah. It's really tough to get in there and really establish a rhythm at the plate. But at a certain point, they need guys to step up. And it just has not happened.
You got to love being Jared Saltalamacchia. You get your first start in whatever, it's 5 days or whatever. And like, here's Chris Sale.
How about Ryan? Sorry, it's a 71% strikeout rate. My bad on that one. Ryan Goins, too. He's in there, gets a start with Tulo getting a rest, and then Chris Sale, lefty on lefty. I mean, it's really tough for these guys.
I don't know. As a hitter, I don't know what you do with that slider. It is such a good pitch that he can throw to both sides of the plate, lefties, righties. He can throw it for strikes. He can make it start outside the zone, move into the zone, and then finish out of the zone. With his arm slot and how quickly that pitch gets on, I don't know what you do with that thing.
Yeah.
It's wild.
And that's the reason that I wrote today. In any other set of circumstances, you lose to Chris Sale, fine. Yeah. All right, he's the best. He's the best pitcher in the league. I mean, it's fine. So that's not really a big deal. And this game in and of itself is totally understandable. The Red Sox are a good team. Chris Sale's a great pitcher in his peak. And yet, when you're 3-11 and you go in there and you lose and you go 3-12, then there is this kind of demoralizing sense surrounding that event.
That wasn't like Chris Sale like picking on a slumping batting order, although the Blue Jays are slumping. Like, you could have put, you know, I feel like you could have put 9 really good hitters who are all hitting well into that batting order, and Chris Sale was still going to have a really good outing. Like, he was on. He threw like 3 balls through the first 4 innings or something. That's crazy.
Yeah. And you remember last year there was the talk about Chris Sale. Hey, he's going to pitch deeper into games, but he's going to sit around 91, 92. Today, he was up to 98.
Is that all?
Yeah, 98.
Good luck.
And down as slow as 74. So you're covering 25 miles an hour. You know, no wonder guys like Bautista look off balance.
good luck. Porcello was doing a similar thing. He would be kind of not 98. He would be, I don't know, 94, 95. And they just flip up that 90, or sorry, that 74 mile an hour curveball. And guy, you could see guys just be like, oh, Jesus. Like, how do you get your timing right against that? Same time, look, you're big league hitters, big league pitchers. You got to have a good approach. You got to be looking for, you know, your pitch. You got to stick to your approach. Even if you end up looking at strike three, as long as you did that while looking for your specific pitch and your specific zone, and if you didn't get it, you didn't get it, but at least have a good, consistent approach so you're not just up there guessing.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And that also reinforces the idea that when you're facing bad teams, you got to win. And those losses against teams like the Brewers, they might come back to really haunt the Blue Jays, because those are games that you have to win. You're ultimately not going to take a team like the Red Sox on and sweep them every time. You're going to have series where you lose two of three, and that's okay. But you do, if you want to be a contender, you have to beat the teams that are going to be out of the race.
You got to not start your season 3-12.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're 3-so, how many wins do you think it takes to make the postseason?
Okay, so
88?
The 88, I think, is accurate.
Or 89, 88?
The minimum that it's ever been in the two wild card era is 86.
It's not going to be that.
I agree. So let's say 88.
Let's say 88. So you got, they played 15. So 147 left.
Yep.
So
you got to win 85.
So you got to win 85. So what's 147 minus 85? That's 85 and 62 the rest of the way is what the Blue Jays have to play.
Which is a 94 win pace.
You're playing real good baseball the rest of the way.
Yeah.
To get to 88 wins. 85 and 62. You've only got 62 more times you can lose.
Right. Yeah. And that's to win a wild card.
That's for a wild card spot.
They're not winning the division.
I don't believe that they will. No, I didn't think they would coming into the year. I thought they were a wild card team coming into the year. I thought they were like a 82 to 83 win team that could kind of go up to 88 or down to like 78, you know, 79. But right now, I mean, we're looking at a team that like is going to be like fighting tooth and nail just to get to 500.
Yeah. It's going to take a long time. I mean, the last time we did one of these, we thought, okay, maybe it'll take until the middle of May to get back to 500. At this point, so they're 9 games under, could take well into May.
Yeah.
You know, that's tough. And the reason I say they're not winning the division, it's not to be overly negative, but
they're not.
You know, if you want to win 93 games, which is the absolute minimum that has been since 2000 to win the AL East, then from here on, they'd have to play at a 100-win clip. And this is right now, this is not a 100-win team. I mean, you can make a case it's a really, lot worse than that.
Really going out on a limb there.
Yeah. Man. Without Aaron Sanchez, without Josh Donaldson, without Jay Happ. I mean, this is, So to ask them to win at that clip, to ask them even to win at a 90-win clip is a lot.
The Blue Jays have 10 games remaining in April. If they win each of them, they're a game over 500. That's if they win out for the rest of April.
If they win out.
For the rest of April, if they win out. They're a game over 500 going into
May. They'd be 13-12.
Yeah, they'd be 13-12. Like, wow. It's crazy, man. Like, it's bad. And the other thing is that it's not just that they're losing. It's that Josh Donaldson is on the DL. It's that, we'll talk about these guys in the second half, but Aaron Sanchez and Jay Happ are both on the DL. It's like bad things are also occurring. Like, everything that can go wrong is going wrong. Roberto Osuna started the year on the DL. Jason Grilly has given up some really big hits and really big spots. You know, like, it's all your worst nightmares are coming true.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, you can imagine if they really turn it on, you can imagine, okay, wild card. I mean, that's, you can think about that. Division, you can't really think about. And then if you get to the wild card game, it's a coin flip. I mean, you might be knocked out anyway. So it's their chances, you know, and I'm sure that not to just like dwell on how badly this is going, but I mean, if we're being realistic, this team has seriously hurt its chances. Not to the point that they're totally gone, but they're much, much smaller than they were.
Yeah, I haven't looked at like the Fangraphs playoff odds or the BP ones or anything like that to this point, but I'd imagine they are not pretty.
Let's take a look.
Yeah, Ben, you'll pull them up. While you're pulling them up, we have to at least mention Kevin Pillar has looked very, very good. This is a guy whose slash line right now is 339, 361, 475, 835 OPS. He's getting on base. He leads the team with 20 hits. He's got 5 doubles. Good for you, Kevin. Good for you.
Yeah, he's actually hitting well.
Yeah, he's having a great year.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, he's doing really well. It's 361 OBP, you know? Like, and who's, look, if he went 0 for May, would I be shocked? Maybe not. He's really streaky.
Yeah.
Super streaky hitter. And he's on a crazy hot streak right now. But look, while he's on this hot streak, bump up those numbers as much as you can so that when you hit a slump, you know, they don't bottom out to a place where you, people are wondering if you're rosterable. You know, I think Kevin Pillar is, you know, he's carried over some of that work they did in the spring into the regular season. It's got to be encouraging for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, it does. Leadoff hitter, you know, they don't have a lot of hitters swinging like he is right now. So put him up there, see what he can do. I thought even his first at bat against Chris Sale, he had a rocket out to right center field and Benintendi ran it down, but he's been making some good contact.
First pitch of the game. I kind of like that approach because you know what? Chris Sale is going to say, hey, I'm going to attack. I'm going to be aggressive. I'm going to try to steal a strike here. Kevin Pillar up at the plate, ready to swing, put a charge into that ball. And he's looked great in center field, as he always does.
Yep.
So that's good. Other guys who have looked good, Justin Smoke,
yep.
Especially from the right side, has looked really good. And we mentioned Countrys Morales. So that's the list. Darren Barney, I guess, he's had some really clutch hits as well. I mean, he basically won them that game on Wednesday night with his hit off of Mr. Porcello. All right, what do you got, Ben?
Playoff odds.
Yeah.
So I'm actually surprised. These are pretty good. relatively speaking.
Yeah.
FanGraphs has them at 14.9%. Now that's before their 12th loss.
Gotcha.
So say that takes it down a few more percentage points.
Yeah.
But 14.9. So it's not nothing. I mean,
that might get them down to 12 or something.
Yeah. Which, you know, it's something. It's not good though. They probably entered the season.
What did they start at? That's what I
would guess around 45 or 50.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've done some serious damage.
Because a third of the teams make it.
Yes.
So, you know, you're thinking if 33 is your baseline, they're better than an average team, obviously. So it'll be higher than that. But now it's taken a big hit.
I feel like 14 is about where I expected it. You were thinking it was going to be single digits. It sounds like.
Yeah. I mean, they played really badly.
It's not, the thing is, nobody's running away with their division. And
right.
I think that's what's helping them right now is, you know, there's nobody, like if Baltimore was like, you know, and Baltimore's had a good start, but if they were like 12-2 or something, it might be different. But, you know, in the division, I mean, the Blue Jays obviously have been the whatever you want to call them. But you know, nobody's cruising right now. But even the Rays have won 9 games. The Tampa Bay Rays, 3 of them against the Toronto Blue Jays, I believe.
Yes, or at least a couple.
Yeah, bueno. The Blue Jays haven't won 2 in a row, 15 games into the year.
Man.
They haven't won 2 in a row.
Yeah, I wonder if it's going to start to wear on them. You know, after a few weeks. Yeah, it has to, right?
It has to. And it seems like you get to the end of that road trip at the beginning of the year and it's like, whoof, Blue Jays sure are glad to be going back home. You get to the end of this homestand, whoof, Blue Jays sure are glad to be going on the road.
I almost structured my piece around that today because I noticed the exact same thing. They're saying this, oh man, yeah, that's exactly what we need. Well, maybe what you need is some more runs, but who am I to say?
It wasn't what you needed last time. Geez. So things aren't good, and when we get back, things aren't going to get better. We're going to talk about the pitching and injuries and everything else to do with the Toronto Blue Jays. All that and so much more when we continue on At the Letters.
Jay Happ. In fact, he might have called Russell out to the mound after that last pitch. Not sure what the issue is. And now they're going to send the trainer out. That's exactly what I thought. There was something that
he stumbled,
felt after the last pitch.
Yeah, stumbled off the mound a little bit or felt it in his arm when he came through.
That's it.
Jason
Dunn. Oh, man. When it rains, it pours.
It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling with Ben Nicholson Smith. Ben's on Twitter at BNicholson Smith. Our producer is Sam McKee. He's on Twitter at Sam A. McKee. While we took a little brief interlude here, we were kind of looking at the National League standings. And look, if you're looking for hope and you're looking for reason to, you know, to feel good about maybe the Blue Jays turning this thing around, I can tell you that the two National League teams, as of this recording on Thursday afternoon, the two National League teams with the most wins, the Colorado Rockies and Arizona Diamondbacks, two teams that, I mean, last year probably lost more than 90 games, I would imagine. I do not think they were very good. The St. Louis Cardinals are 6-9, as are the Pittsburgh Pirates. Maybe not, you know, maybe you don't expect the Pirates to be too good, but you definitely expect the Cardinals to be pretty good. I mean, the Cubs aren't even in first place.
Giants are 6-10.
Giants 6-10. The Rangers are 5-10. I think people probably expect the Rangers to be a bit better.
Yep.
Than that. Or what else can we point out for you here? Not too much really. Look, it's early.
I mean, Jason Vargas has an 0.09 ERA. I mean, you look around, like, there's just so many weird things that happen this time of year.
Yeah.
And I actually think we're going to look back and we're going to say, wow, that was weird. The Jays were 3-12 at one point. They were, right. That was so out of character. It is out of character. At the same time, they're 3-12. So you can't undo that. There's no way around that fact. They have to now play 9 games above 500 just to even the ledger.
They need one of those 11-game win streaks that we have seen in recent years of this franchise. How often can you pull something like that off? Probably not very often. But that is what the Blue Jays need really, really badly, because they have only 3 wins. And the team with the next amount of most wins, I would want to say, is the Rangers and the Phillies, who each have 5. That's the company you're keeping, Toronto Blue Jays fans. The company that Aaron Sanchez and Jay Happ are keeping are that of the Blue Jays training staff, because they are both on the disabled list. That's not good, particularly for the over-under bet in which I said the Blue Jays weren't going to use that many starting pitchers. I forget, but this weekend we're going to get up to 7 starting pitchers used by the Toronto Blue Jays in 2017, which matches, as you pointed out in your piece at sportsnet.ca, the entire, like, as many starting pitchers as they used in 2016.
It's crazy. Yeah. Casey Lawrence and Matt Latos.
It's all falling apart.
Yeah, the latest members of the Toronto Blue Jays. And that's the other part of this where, okay, so they need to get back to 500. They need to get back in this thing. 9 games to go. And then who are your next 2 starters? Matt Latos and Casey Lawrence, 2 pitchers who, until this point, have been at AAA.
Yes, and 2 pitchers who, at least Matt Latos has a track record in his career, but it's certainly not recent. Recent major league track record, no bueno. Casey Lawrence has been in the majors only once this year. Didn't look great, but you know the Blue Jays like him. He's a very advanced prospect. You can't even really call him a prospect. He's 29, been in the Blue Jays system for his entire professional career. I know the club likes what he does. They like that he sinks it and he cuts it and he just kind of moves the ball around the zone, gets weak contact. He's not going to overpower you, but you know he's really more of a pitcher than a thrower. So, you know, I know the club likes that. And, you know, John Gibbons has, you know, said before, like, look, when Matt Latos is on, he comes from a tough angle and he can be overpowering, big curveball, velocity on the fastball. When he's on, he's good. When he's not, he's like setting exit velocity records. So we'll see what you get out of them this weekend. But look, it's, you know, if you're looking to feel confident about the Blue Jays going into Los Angeles to play another one of those weak teams that they should be beaten up on, when Matt Latos and Casey Lawrence are your probables, you're not feeling great.
Right.
Save me from this, Ben.
If you're a pessimist, then you're probably thinking that Mike Trout is going to have himself quite a weekend.
He's going to hit a ball like 150 miles an hour off Matt Latos.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. So, I think that both these guys are, you know, Mark Shapiro said it at the beginning of the year. The Blue Jays, as currently built, look at starting pitching depth as a weakness on this team. So now that's already being tested. Third week of the season, already being tested, where Latos and Lawrence, 2 guys they really didn't ideally want to rely on, are going to be relied on. And in Latos's case, it looks like he'll get at least 2 starts. Depending on the status of Sanchez and Happ, maybe more, but at least 2 starts for him. And he's not the guy that he was when he was a ace caliber pitcher with the Padres. He's not. He's someone who can give you 5 solid innings. He's not going to be fazed by the environment. He's not going to be intimidated by facing Trout and Pujols. And that's something. But I think if he were to go 5 innings, allow 2 runs, that would be huge. And like, seriously, that would be great.
That's a terrific outcome.
Yeah, that's a terrific outcome. And if he goes 5 innings and allows 4 runs, that's solid, you know, and anything less than that, you know, they'd be disappointed.
Yeah, Matt Latos is a guy that the Blue Jays wanted to make this team. They wanted him in this bullpen. And frankly, he pitched his way out of that spot. In my opinion.
Right.
He pitched his way out of it in spring. He was not good.
Yeah, who had Dominic Leone starting that season on this team? I don't think anyone did. And he's been good, to his credit.
They want him to be the long guy. Now here he is to start, and we'll see how it goes. Like you said, he's probably going to get two outings because, look, you need somebody for St. Louis. You can option Casey Lawrence and just preserve what razor-thin depth you have and keep Matt Lietos around for another start. And then you kind of see how things go with Aaron Sanchez and J-Hap. J-Hap through today, I'm pretty sure. And weird that he didn't want to talk after, or that Pete Walker also didn't want to talk after. Is that your take on that? That's weird. I mean, look, even if it went poorly, you could have just said, yeah, you know, we're just, you know, trying it out through 20 pitches. We'll see what happens next time.
I mean, certainly he's normally an approachable guy, guy who will talk. And so I wasn't among the reporters who asked him to speak, but I have seen the footage of him throwing out there. He was throwing very lightly today. Mm. So it's not as though he was airing it out with a bullpen session. It was some light toss, and we'll see. I mean, it's you got to be careful when you're talking about elbows. And he said initially, what was his wording that he used on Sunday?
It's a tug, or like it was something was grabbing, I guess, was the way he put it.
It's not good.
That's not good.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want to hear that. Although the thing that was encouraging about Sunday was that he, after the tug and the grab, he went back out and was still throwing 91-92. And he said, look, it didn't feel good. I didn't feel right. I was going to lose effectiveness. But the fact that he was still able to throw 91-92 with the injury is encouraging. And then, you know, he goes for the MRI and they say, you know, and whatever the team has told us, that there was nothing significant structurally, you know, in the tendon or anything. So that's good.
Yep.
But, you know, look, if you're, even if J-Hap can get back on the mound and pitch with this thing, you know, you're still probably dealing with like an 80% J-Hap. It's not what you want.
Yeah, right. So he's going to take some time and try to get that inflammation under control, working with Jay's training staff. And best case scenario is a pretty short stint on the DL. I guess it's a wait and see thing for this point. They'll see how he feels after he throws and see if he's ready to try maybe a bit more of a formal bullpen session where he'd be airing it out a bit more. But he's really important to this team. It probably does make sense for them to be cautious and keep in mind the whole 6-month scope of the season.
Yeah. What concerns you more, the J-Hap elbow, or that's been an issue for a week now, or Aaron Sanchez blister, which has been an issue for 2 years now, you know, and keeps coming back, and they keep trying to find solutions to correct it, and the solutions keep failing? Is that almost a little bit more of a worry? I don't know.
Yeah.
The fact that it keeps coming up, man, and that it keeps coming back, and that they can't get rid of this thing, and they've gone to the point now where they've like sawed off half of his fingernail, and they're like, let's see if this crazy this thing works, where they're using like acid and chemicals to make sure his fingernail doesn't grow back in that spot, like something that this guy's going to carry for the rest of his life. That's significant, man. Like, that's not, you know, your first option when you're treating this thing.
Right. And I think that even having followed the Rich Hill blister situation from afar last year, when he was almost, you know, he's in all these trade rumors and he's ultimately traded, and then he goes to the Dodgers and he's so good when he's on, but then this blister thing always comes up and he's dealing with it again now this year. So this is clearly reminiscent of that. It's a curveball that's very important to Aaron Sanchez. He doesn't throw it as often as Rich Hill throws his curveball, but it's still a big piece of his repertoire.
It's enormous for Aaron Sanchez. It's huge. Aaron Sanchez is not Aaron Sanchez without it, because the two-seamer is only effective because hitters are like, oh, is that curveball coming?
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. Because
if hitters know you don't have that curveball, like, well, let's just sit heater today, boys.
Yeah, exactly. And it would be tough to hit still. I mean, we've seen him in relief when he's throwing 90% fastballs and he's still tough, but there's still that 9 or 10% where he's mixing in that curveball. And it is a weapon for him. We've seen him use it all the time in the course of the last few years. He needs that pitch, and the blister prevents him from throwing it with the same effectiveness, with the same frequency that he otherwise would. So, yeah, I think, you know, to answer your question, I think the blister is a more concerning, from the outside looking in, I'd say it's more concerning than Hap. Yeah. Although with Hap, there's also a lot of uncertainty. I mean, I think both these injury situations are a little more severe than you might initially think after, right. Severe is the wrong word. They're a little more concerning than you might initially think after hearing the Blue Jays say that they think it'll be 10 days for both.
I think the fact that Hap was throwing today is very encouraging. He wouldn't be throwing if the Blue Jays felt like that, you know, he needed, you know, it's like, it's a little strange even that he didn't take, he didn't have more rest. We're talking about, this happened on Sunday, so we're talking about 4 days later, he's throwing. already. They didn't even say, all right, let's shut you down for a week, you know, or all right, let's take 10 days to just let that inflammation settle down. It's like, nope, back thrown in 4 days. So I think that's encouraging. Whereas, and especially, it's not like Hap's a guy who's in a contract year or something, right? Like, you know, he's settled, he's fine. Yep. Like they can, you know, be as cautious as they need to be with this thing. With Sanchez, I mean, the fact that this blister keeps coming up, he's so good when it's not bothering him. But like, you know, you look at Rich Hill, man, like it's very similar scenario. Blue Jays fans will remember Al Leiter as well, you know, and like blisters are, they're just such a nightmare for pitchers because you can't, you know, even when you think that you've gotten it healed or you get it down to a part where there's a callus, you just snap a curveball off the seam of the baseball or something, create a little friction, open up that skin. And now all of a sudden, like it's a real problem.
And there's no clear solution. That's the other part of it. I mean, you hear people like Rich Hill tried urinating on his blister. I mean, this is the kind of like you're into like home folklore type of remedies for this stuff. And of course, what they're doing with what they did with Sanchez, where they actually cut off part of the nail and try to get him to throw there. But, you know, there's no easy, okay, you know, we're going to get him 10 days of treatment and then he's going to be good to go. That's not the way it works with these things because they can pop up again.
Last year they had him like dipping his hand in pickle juice and stuff, right? Like they, you know, they try like all kinds of crazy stuff to try to, you know, cure these blisters. But it's just, if every 5 days you are, you know, you think about how much friction and how much like snap it takes to throw a really effective curveball, because you're trying to up your spin rate because you want the ball spinning a lot. So that's how you get big movement, is with a lot of spin. So you have to really like snap that thing down. And so you're going to create a lot of friction. You're going to have a lot of pressure and a lot of stress on that area of the finger. It's tough to heal a blister when you're doing that every 5 days.
Yeah, for sure. And so that's one of the bigger questions surrounding this Blue Jays rotation at this point.
Marco Estrada has been really, really good, and probably even better than people would expect from him. I've said it before. I love watching a Marco Estrada start because he just carves and you just see the awkward swings. He gets that weak contact. You know, that's looked great. Francisco Liriano, nice bounce back after that nightmare outing in his first appearance of the season. You know, he's looked good since. Russ Martin was telling me last night that his fastball command has come back in a really big way. And he thought that Francisco was a little bit slider heavy earlier in the year. And he said last night, like, he was really trusting his fastball, mixing up his sequences against the Red Sox. Something you got to do against a team like that. Good veteran hitters. They recognize sequences. They recognize patterns, and they'll take advantage of them. So that was good. Marcus Stroman, kind of a mixed bag. Any of those three you would like to discuss?
I actually think that in all three cases, there's reason for a lot of confidence with these guys. And it might sound, you know, a little weird having just talked so much about the tough spot the Jays are in. I think all three of these guys are really good pitchers who are going to have good years. And I know Liriano had that really awful start to the season, but he bounced back in his start against the Red Sox. That's got to be encouraging. I know Stroman was lit up in his start also against the Red Sox, and that's okay. It's going to happen.
Boston's kind of got his number a little bit.
They do, yeah. They hit him hard in 2016 as well. You know, he's disappointed, obviously, but I think, you know, just seeing what he did against Tampa, seeing what he did against the Brewers,
right,
he looked really good. I think Stroman's going to be just fine, and the same goes for Estrada. And he'll have his bumps too. Hasn't had them so far. He's been really good, but I think all three of those guys. I mean, if there's a path for the Blue Jays to somehow get back on track, these guys are going to be big parts of it, and they'll have to keep doing what they have been doing, which is for the most part pitching pretty well.
The room for error is slim. Margin for error with those three, very, very slim, because, you know, as we said, the other two in the rotation are AAA starters. No offense to them. And you're turning the ball over to a bullpen, which has been getting great work from Joe Biagini, which has Roberto Osuna back and throwing with high velocity. It's really good. Just had Joe Smith be a really pleasant surprise. Outside of those three, not a lot of trust out there in the left field bullpen at Rogers Center. Jason Grilli's gotten beat in some really big spots. And then from there, like, you just go off a cliff to, you know, guys you really only want to use situationally or in multi-inning roles or mop-up duty or whatever, between, you know, Aaron Loop, Ryan Tepera, Dominic Leone, Danny Barnes is on this team right now. That's what you're looking at.
Yeah, and with Grilli, he is a guy who had earned the Blue Jays' trust. He earned it really quickly last year when he got here.
Yes.
At a time that they really needed answers in the bullpen, he provided them with one. And you wonder how long he's able to hold on to that trust if he's pitching like this. And it's, you know, he was a huge piece of this team last year, but he's not pitching well right now. So you wonder if they go to Joe Biagini in the eighth inning instead of a Jason Grilli.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Biagini is so useful getting the ball to that point, right? Like, if you have a starter who only goes 5 1/3 or 5 2/3 or even 6, Joe Biagini is so useful in that bridge spot because he can go multiple innings. He can get you, you know, a gang out. He can, you know, to move him into a one-inning, eighth-inning role almost hurts you in taking him out of the role he's in right now.
And that's fair. What do you do with Grilli at this point if you're the Jays? Just keep running him out there. I mean, it is early. It's only been 15 games.
He is what he is, man. You know, it's fastball slider. You know, the velocity has been all right. I thought that in Thursday's game against the Red Sox, he just was not getting the corners of the zone that he wanted, that he needed to. I thought he had a couple pitches that were just like right on the black. They just didn't get the calls. And, you know, he's going to live on that block, he's going to need those calls. You know, you look at what he did on Wednesday against the Red Sox. He got himself into a bit of trouble with two runners on. He had a ball go off his shin, and then he just threw like a challenge fastball to Mookie Betts, which, look, the outcome was great. I think it was a fly out or maybe a ground out, actually. I think he might have bounced it to Troy Tulowitzki short, but still, you threw Mookie Betts a fastball over the heart of the plate. That's not, Mookie Betts ain't going to get beat by that too many times. You got him that time, but, you know, just the way Jason Grilli is pitching, it troubles you.
And the very next day, I mean, he's facing Mookie Betts, big situation right there. And Betts hits the 3-run double that ends up winning the game.
Yeah.
So it's tough. And I mean, if you are the Blue Jays, all of these problems in the bullpen, anytime a defender throws to the wrong base, they all get highlighted because they're not scoring runs. They're scoring 3 runs a game. I mean, this is an offense that at times scored 6 or 7 runs a game. And maybe, I mean, definitely that's unrealistic to recapture, but 5 shouldn't be unrealistic for an offense of this caliber for a week at a time. You know, you should have a week where you average 5 runs
a game.
Absolutely
not. They've only scored more than 5 3 times.
Yeah.
One of those times, they beat the Rays 5-2. The other time, the Rays scored 10 runs, and they lost 10-8. And then the third time, Blue Jays scored 7, Red Sox scored 8, and the Red Sox won. That was on Tuesday. So, this is a team that absolutely has to be scoring more than the 3 runs a game that they are scoring now, because I don't care how good your pitching is. You play teams like the Boston Red Sox and Baltimore Orioles as often as you do. You need offense to win, because those are teams that are going to hit. Damn it. The Orioles are going to hit a gang of home runs. You know, the Red Sox are going to string together hits and get hot. You've got to be, you know, even like you look at the Angels this weekend. I mean, you're still looking at Cole Calhoun, Mike Trout, Albert Pujols. Like, you're still looking at guys who can leave the yard.
Definitely. And so that's where the Jays have really been outperformed this year, because they're not hitting home runs. They are allowing home runs. This is a game right now where home runs are a big deal, or a lot of home runs in baseball. If you want to be on the right side of that ledger, and to this point in the season, they just haven't been. So one of the many things that's going to have to change about this team for them to turn things around.
Yes. Yes, it is. I don't know what else to say, man. We've been through the bats. We've been through the starters. We've been through the bullpen. Not a lot of optimism there. And I can't really give you any. It's the team's just not playing well. If this continues through the end of the month, you're talking about an April that has perhaps sunk the season.
Absolutely. Know? Yeah.
I mean, they've got 10 games left in this month, and they absolutely need to go 500 at the bare minimum in those 10.
Right. And you know, you'll notice we're not talking about rebuilds. We're not talking about fire sales.
No, it's too early to
talk
about
that. It is too early.
That.
And you know,
but it's not too early to say that they may have submarined their playoff chances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, I mean,
but that doesn't mean that at the end of April you start, you know, building packages for guys.
It's just not the way that, not the way that it works timing wise anyway. So, you know, at this point in the season, teams are focused on the draft, if anything. So you're just not going to pull off trades. But it's, it's definitely fair to say that they have seriously cut into their chances with these two very disappointing weeks.
5-5 over the next 10. Do you think that's realistic? Going
sure.
through LA, St. Louis, and then back home for Tampa?
I still think they're a good team. I actually, you know, and now they're without Donaldson, without Sanchez and Happ. So given that, I'd still think they're a decent team. So yeah, 5-5 sounds about right.
Think about the wins they've lost there. Josh Donaldson is like a 7-8 win guy. Sanchez probably 4-5.
Yep.
Happ 3-4. Yep. You know, Happ doesn't get as much credit as he needs. You lost a lot of wins there.
Yeah. And even if Donaldson misses, you know, who knows? They're not being very specific with the timeline. Could be a few weeks though.
Yeah.
Could be 3 weeks.
I don't expect to see him till May.
Yeah. Oh, definitely not.
Yeah.
I definitely don't think
so. Then that would make it
easily, essentially a month.
Yeah, that would make it, yeah.
So that's a win right there if he's a 6-1 guy. I mean, it's, you can go down this path, you know, and start to really talk yourself into circles here. But the bottom line is they're not only a team with a bad record, they're a team that's lost 3 key players.
Right. And it's not like a lot of teams have like superstars waiting in the wings. But when you lose Josh Donaldson, it's, you know, Chris Coughlin is stepping in. You know, you lose Jay Habener and Sanchez, it's Matt Latos and Casey Lawrence. Like the drop off is steep.
Yeah. Whereas other teams, I mean, the Pirates have Starling Marte suspended. All right. Well, maybe they use Adam Frazier more. Maybe they call up Austin Meadows. Some teams do have guys ready to step in. In this case, the Jays are in a really tough spot.
And that is why before the season, when I was asked, what's your biggest concern with this team? It was, I would say depth always. And a lot of times I would say specifically starting pitching depth, because like while you know, the Blue Jays had 5 really good arms in that rotation, you need them all healthy.
Yeah. Not the way it's going so far.
No. So that's what we got for you this week on At the Letters. Maybe next week we'll have some wins to talk about. Who knows? The Blue Jays are off to play the LA Angels, a little West Coast baseball this weekend. The games will be on late. It's 10 p.m. Eastern start on Friday, 9 p.m. on Saturday, 3:37 p.m. on Sunday. And then they play on Monday, too, at 10 p.m. Then they go from Los Angeles to St. Louis with night games on Monday and Tuesday, which is a true grind for the people who cover this team and have to try to fly commercially from L.A. to St. Louis.
If you're in the Houston airport early on Tuesday morning and you see a bedraggled-looking Shide Avedi, say hello for us.
Yes. Maybe buy him a coffee.
Yeah.
So, hey, thanks for coming along. For Sam McKee, for Ben Nicholson-Smith, my name's Arden Zwelling. Talk to you next week on At the Letters.